this episode of the Refresh podcast, this is going to be a little bit different. I'm not going to be going into one big topic like I did with cancel culture. This is more of a behind the scenes, if you will, of where I'm trying to go with a lot of the research that I've been doing. And this is just how I've been going there, and you can see my thought process and some of the things that I've learned from where I'm at right now with looking at the ethical implications of building technology products and just continuing on this idea of technology exploiting and altering our natural tendencies. So, as always, I'm Ethan Blake. Welcome to the Refresh Podcast, episode, 1.5.
Before I get started, I want to talk about my sponsor, Anchor.
My original driving question is, how is technology exploiting and altering our natural tendencies, and what can we do about it? The changes I made to it were by adding two different sub-questions. What are the implications for the future in terms of human functioning and communication, and how can companies consider the ethical implications of their work, and why should they? After my visual presentation where I looked at the effects of our technology and how we can avoid them, I wanted to further that exploration by looking at how things can be changed in the tech world to prevent a lot of these effects from cropping up in the first place so that consumers don't have to worry about them themselves. For my scholarly article, Practicing Human-Centered Design for Innovation, it was published by the Organization Development Network, which helps create effective and healthy organizations. They're guided by clearly articulated values, principles, and ethical standards, and they serve as agents for change by creating a global community for exchanging best practices, opportunities to interact with thought leaders, and access to leading cutting-edge practices, tools, and technologies. This source was published in the Organization Development Network's journal as of summer 2017, and it addresses the importance of incorporating human-centered design for consumers and companies and how to integrate it. Namely, the benefits for the corporations themselves, how to get people to participate, and the benefits that they can see. For my auditory source, I went with a podcast from Vox, this episode titled How Technology Brings Out the Worst in Us, featuring Google design ethicist Tristan Harris, who's the former CEO of Aperture before it was acquired by Google in 2011, and became one of the first people to blow the whistle on big tech, and then founded the Center for Humane Technology, which is an independent nonprofit which aims to realign technology with humanity. The podcast was uploaded of February 2018. It discusses mindfulness in tech and how change can be made, whether that change can be made internally or whether it has to be made externally, and various steps that they're trying to take in order to make sure that the user's interests are the main priority. For an additional source, I looked at a TED Talk given by Tristan Harris. He gave this at TED 2017, and it's really about just this idea that only like a few select people are working on designing an algorithm that steers our thoughts of billions of people, and how certain design choices are all competing for attention, and they're purposeful. They're preying on our psychology for their profit. And Tristan really calls for a design renaissance where our tech encourages us to live out the timeline that we want.
So let's talk about some of the things that I learned. This has led to a lot of people feeling disillusioned by Silicon Valley, and many people are starting to become more aware of the tactics that are being used, but it's hard to see that there's a lot of change that's coming from it. And part of that things staying stagnant is the bad ideologies that people in Silicon Valley have. For example, there are people believe, for example, that if you say you want to exercise, but then you're offered donuts and you go straight for the donuts, their ideology over at places like Facebook is that, well, we'll just give you more donuts because that's what you actually took. You said that you wanted to go to the gym and work out, but what you actually did compared to what you said you would do are two separate things, and we should be catering to the things that we know you're going to take. And essentially what that means is it's more or less a justification for stuff like infinite scrolling, autoplay videos, outrage, which are specifically designed to grab our attention. But even when we tell ourselves that that's not what we want, the statistics argue otherwise, and therefore a lot of the executives and stuff over there think that we want that outrage, we want the autoplay videos, we want all those things that are designed to keep us hooked. For example, you look at Snapchat. It's obviously one of the most popular social media tools for teens and young adults right now. And the biggest core part of it that keeps people coming back to it are Snapchat streaks, where, like, you have to send someone a picture every day, and if you miss one day, you lose your streak or whatnot. The streaks don't have much meaning other than the number, but they basically serve as social validation for a friendship or whatnot, and if you don't keep those up, it's almost as if your friendship has less meaning. So, kids are handing out their passwords to others when they go on vacations. I've seen people try to update their snap streaks during, like, dangerous situations, like during a lockdown drill. And it's very scary, and it's part of the reason why I don't use Snapchat. I'd say it's really just a matter of sunk cost theory, where just the more you put into it, the more you feel an obligation to keep something going. And yeah, it's been shown that teens will, even when they don't have access to their phones, they'll share their passwords, which is something you should never do, by the way, for their social media accounts or their phones. And the message, or just that, like, if they have a lot of friends with streaks that they're trying to constantly update, for some friends, ones that maybe they don't communicate as much with, they'll just send them a picture of literally whatever. There's no meaning behind it. It's merely just to update and keep this number going. The messages are empty, but there's this external pressure to keep them going. One quote that I found very interesting from one of my sources was that, according to Tristan Harris, technology feels disempowering because we haven't built it around an honest view of human nature. I think that idea is very important, and I think if you potentially can imagine what a lot of our social media or just apps in general would be like if they didn't totally and completely lie on how much we use them, but more as tools that we can use. This is obviously very optimistic, but if you think about when someone goes on Facebook and they're lonely and they want to reach out to their friends, instead of kind of dragging them along and just kind of separating that information out into breadcrumbs, allow people to be able to better communicate and be like, hey, I'm lonely, I'm not doing so well or something, and I was wondering if me and a couple other people could hang out or something, or just, you know, technology should be helping us achieve the goals that we want. It shouldn't try to leverage what we want in order to make a profit. But obviously, the way that the systems have been designed is completely counterproductive to that. It only serves to make them more money. First up, let's discuss some of the implications that really come with designing technology. First off, a lot of people really learned about this during the 2016 election with Russians, the role of fake news, and exploitative algorithms on platforms like Facebook. And I think another thing that's important to look at is a lot of companies are preaching that they're adding all these useful tools, mindfulness programs, stuff like that, which is just so hypocritical because the products that they're pushing themselves are creating stress and the problems. So it's really slapping a Band-Aid on a bullet hole. They're not necessarily providing a sufficient way for people to really live their lives in a healthy way again. You have to change the product itself. You can't just add a feature and expect that to fix things. The outrage, the randomized rewards, the stimulation and the social validation that people get from it, especially, you know, fake news, stuff like that. It's a lot of us, when we see, social media companies and, you know, big tech, they're so benevolent, they're adding all these features, like Google's going to add a meditation feature and all these other cool programs that should help people. But the bottom line is that the products themselves are the problem. And the thing is, the stock prices of a lot of these big tech companies rely on the tools that keep us hooked. Their stock prices and stuff like that rely on user retention. The longer that you use their service, the more data they can collect and the more money they'll inevitably make. But since our services have been designed in a way where they're virtually all free, there's no incentive for the companies to try to remove them, because if they do, they'll be losing money. So the reason why a lot of this change isn't happening is because many people feel that it would hurt them to implement a lot of these changes. But if you're able to unlink that monetary connection between our attention, that would open up a lot of opportunities for people to design things that work better with us as humans. I think some of the main things I've taken away from my research in this phase was, as I mentioned, just how to include these things. So my scholarly article included some good advice on the way of inspiration, ideation, and implementation as the three main steps, where you identify a design challenge, recognize your existing knowledge, and choose your research methods, and develop an interview approach, and then establish a team mindset for inspiration. You put yourself in the user's shoes, essentially, and observe, ask questions, and just really try to understand how users think and feel, and try to come up with ways that you can improve their lives. A lot of that comes from empathy, just really understanding how other people feel, and you want something that will really meet the needs of your users, and also you also need to get past forcing one of the people working on it to put aside any pre-existing beliefs and any assumptions and really create a new opportunity and kind of distance yourself from a lot of the preconceived notions that we have. We also need to look at many different groups of people in order to understand where we should be catering to.
So you want to be looking at people more in the center of things and then look at both extremes. This is really going to allow for more creative options, but you're not going to alienate your main base. You need to be able to consider nuanced cases and challenges and basically create opportunities for everybody. So in terms of ideation, it's more of just developing an approach, identifying patterns, and brainstorming solutions, and then kind of bringing those ideas into fruition and gathering feedback on them. So it's really about generating as many ideas as possible from the data that you gather through your research in the inspiration phase. And then you synthesize that by making meaning out of what is seen and heard. And then you prototype, just remove guesswork and ensure that the changes that are made are guided by your user base. It's a continuous conversation, essentially, between the user and the software developers. And then comes implementation, which is just making sure that the platform that you're building is sustainable, and just come up with a timeline of how you're going to implement various things. And then the most effective businesses generally are the ones that are able to get together their organizational strategy, and we'll see a lot of benefits from that. You need a lot of collaboration with sponsors, stakeholders, and looking at the ratio between cost and benefit. So essentially, by empowering your employees, to innovate and really improve their work, it provides a sense of autonomy that boosts a lot of people's job satisfaction because they feel like they're solving real world issues. And managers and higher level people that promote this innovative environment will also see increased motivation of their own employees and just higher rates of creativity, and just in general, organizations, ones that are able to come up with these innovative solutions are going to be able to quickly adapt to changing markets and really disrupt the industry. And that's something that Silicon Valley has been trying to do for a very long time. But the problem is the way they've been going about it hasn't had the user's best interests. But by emphasizing the user as an essential starting point, you're not only getting those sustainable solutions, but you're also going to be disrupting whatever and coming up with ideas that maybe other people wouldn't be able to come up with because and you also get the benefit of, helping people. So I've done research and I've presented about what technology does to our brains and why that's important and how their success, of a lot of these big technology corporations is tied to user activity. But we haven't really explored what the companies can do to change that. I've looked at what users can do to try to limit these effects, but at the end of the day, that's not going to help everybody. The problem themselves are, the products. And unless we establish some sort of ethical code or, human-centered design has shown that it can deliver benefits for generating business value, enhance current capabilities, and facilitate almost a complete overhaul of a business, and really just offer new products and services that are going to help people and make them more competitive. But a lot of companies are wary of this, and they're perfectly content with where they are in terms of stuff like that, and they would rather focus on just kind of the direction they're going. This is a completely separate direction almost of human-centered design, where companies don't see a reason to employ it, but it seems like there's actual genuine benefits, and I feel like over time, hopefully companies will start to realize that maybe
not only for the ethical reasons, but the economic benefits. It'll start to be implemented more. And that's really it for this side kind of episode of the Refresh podcast. I just wanted to kind of detail how I've been progressing in terms of my research leading up to a culminating kind of product, and how I'm really going to try to look at a lot of these issues and possibly address some of them. I know this isn't really a full episode. This isn't addressing anything new. There's no people to interview, but this is all I really have for now, and I appreciate the patience that you guys have. Thank you so much.